because I didn't care. There was too much else to think about. The letter said that after the explosion, students had been evacuated to a nearby Days Inn under the supervision of the RAs and house mothers until their parents could come retrieve them. Tomorrow, Sharingford was bringing in a specialist team from Boston to sweep the campus for other possible leaks. And after they gave the all clear, students would be escorted in roommate pairs to get their things. They'd give us each 10 minutes to pack. The schedule for each dorm had been attached. My father put his smartphone away and looked me hard in the eye. "Charlotte is here. She's safe, and I've been very patient. But now I need you to either give me an explanation for why you 15 vicious cuts and an exploded science building, or I'm taking you to the hospital." Abby's hand stilled in my hair. I tried my best to sketch it out for him, my fight with Holmes, the bugged room and the broken mirror, the homemade bomb, our suspicions about Mr. Wheatley and Nurse Bryony and the Moriartys, what I'd said to Tom in our room. My father had out his ever-present notebook, and he jotted things down as I spoke. When I came to the part about August Moriarty, how the records on him just stopped, what Milo had scrubbed from the Daily Mail, the thing Charlotte wouldn't tell me, my father made a disgruntled sound. "Jamie, number 15, if you wait for full disclosure from a Holmes, it might be years before you learn a damn thing." I threw up my hands. "Tabloids, Dad. The Daily Mail. Have they ever been an accurate source of information? And anyway, I couldn't look it up even if I wanted to." "You," my father said sadly, "still have rather a lot to learn. Don't you remember the stories I used to tell you about Charlotte?" "Yes," I said. "I'm not stupid." "Since you're not stupid, you have, of course, reasoned from that information that I've kept tabs on her since she was a little girl, and that I most likely have a file or two up in my study that could fill you in on some of this." The answers had been there all this time. All this time, in my childhood home. I opened my mouth to ask him for the file when he looked at me and said, "You know, if you hadn't been so unfairly angry with me, you might have gotten your hands on it weeks ago." That settled it, because I might have had a burning need to know the truth about Charlotte Holmes, might have obsessed over it for an endless string of awful nights, but I still resented my father more. "I don't want it." He looked like I'd struck him. "What?" "You heard me," I told him. "This is between the two of us, and I trust her." "But..." "I trust her, Dad." It was true, after all. "Of course. Of course you do." My father sighed, pinching the bridge of his nose. "Right. Anyway, that detective of yours has been calling me all night. Do you not have your mobile?" "No." "That explains it. I'll call him back and tell him what you told me." He lifted his notebook. "If you'd like to go to bed." "Yes, more than anything." I stood unsteadily. "No hospital, then?" He gave a surprised laugh. "Are you mad? Someone's trying to kill you. No, you're staying right here." Shaking his head, he disappeared into the hallway. Abby was putting away her first aid kit, smiling to herself. Did she think all of this was fun? I subtracted a few of the points I'd given her. "What exactly is so funny?" "It's like you're his mini-me," she said. "Oh, it's awful, all of it. But it's like a spy movie. I mean, how cool?" Well, my father had married the right woman. She was just as insensitive as he was. "My best friend almost died today," I said to her. "It was a really close call. I don't think that's cool." She patted me on the shoulder. "If you hold on a sec, I'll get a fitted sheet for that mattress." I stomped up the stairs with an armload of linens. In the guest room, Holmes was curled under the floral coverlet, sound asleep in her clothes. She'd scrubbed some of the dirt from her face, but not all of it, and she looked like a Dickensian orphan against the white sheets. I unfolded the blanket from the end of the bed and tucked it over her, standing for a long moment to watch the moon move across her hair. She was alive. She would wake up tomorrow to scheme and argue with me, to bring me terrible sandwiches, to push against me until I made myself a better partner. Her sad eyes and her sharp tongue, and the way she touched my shoulder when she thought I wasn't listening. I was always listening. She was right there, and still I couldn't believe it. I resisted the urge to brush her hair away from her forehead. She stirred, and I pulled my hand back.
"What's in? What is it?"
"Nothing. Go back to sleep."
"I shouldn't," she said, pushing herself up. "We need to work this case. Something terrible is about to happen."
I gently pushed her back down. "Not tonight. Nothing will happen tonight. Go back to sleep." I pulled my mattress up next to the bed and lay down. It sighed out a long breath of air.
"Watson."
"What?"
"I'm sorry I picked a fight with you," Holmes said sleepily. "But you should know that I had a good reason."
"I know. I was being an idiot. I really didn't want to do this now. I didn't, but I would if I had to."
"No, it wasn't your fault."
Her voice was fading into a thin whisper.
"The note said you'd be killed if you stayed, so I fixed it. I was horrible until you went away."
I sat straight up into the dark, but Holmes was already asleep. Had it been any other day in the history of my life, and I'd been told something like that, I would have stopped sleeping altogether. But that night I was out in the space of 10 minutes. It wasn't that I felt particularly brave or that I'd resigned myself to my violent, rapidly approaching death, though that wasn't a bad plan, really. My body had just proved itself physically incapable of handling more terror. Enough, it decided, and shut the whole thing down. I woke as the first rays of sun crept into the room. More precisely, I woke to a toddler-shaped eclipse.
"Hi,"
he said, placing a sticky hand square on my mouth. I removed it carefully, sitting up.
"Hello," I said. "How did you get in here?"
Holmes's bed was rumpled and empty and the door wide open.
"I like ducks."
He looked disconcertingly like pictures I'd seen of myself as a child. Guileless eyes, wild, dark hair. My mother used to say I could get away with murder, and looking at him, I believed it. For the record, I'd never resented my half-brothers for anything that happened between my father and me. They were little kids, and none of it was their fault. Besides, he was pretty cute. "I like ducks, too," I said, and scooped him up to take him downstairs with me. Thankfully, I wasn't inexperienced at talking to babies. I had a whole mess of little cousins.
"What's your name?"
"Malcolm,"
he said in a shy voice.
"Your name is Jamie."
"That's right," I bounced him a little as we walked into the kitchen.
"It snowed,"
he yelled, pointing out the back door at the expanse of white lawn. I wondered what the wreckage of the sciences building looked like this morning, our destroyed lab open to the air, all shrouded in white. With a strange pang, I wondered if Holmes's collection of teeth survived. Abby turned around from the stove where she was making pancakes.
"Oh no, mal attack. Sorry about that. I wanted to let you sleep in."
I shrugged, juggling Malcolm to my other arm.
"It's okay. He was just saying hi. Have you seen Holmes? I need to find her and kill her."
She gave me a dubious look.
"In the family room with your father and Robbie. He's showing her the cat."
"I didn't know you had a cat," I said, trying to make conversation. I did, in fact, know they had a cat. I was really hoping to get one of those pancakes. Abby frowned and didn't offer me one.
"It's skittish and hates everyone. Robbie spent the last hour trying to find him for her."
"Come along," I sing-songed to Malcolm. "We're going to meet Miss Charlotte, who thinks that keeping Mr. Jamie in the dark is a fun, fun game." In the family room, my father and Holmes were examining a piece of paper they'd laid out on the coffee table. The cat, a handsome tabby, was purring on her lap.
"But it hates me,"
the small boy at her feet was saying plaintively.
"Why does he like you?"
She looked down at him, considering.
"Because I have a bigger lap for him to sit on.
Wait 10 or so years, and then he might like you better. Robbie burst into tears. Right, my father said. He took Malcolm from me and grabbed Robbie by the hand, leading him from the room as he sobbed. Let's see if your mother has finished with those pancakes. Holmes hardly noticed. She whipped out a tiny magnifying glass and leaned over the paper. Watson, come here and tell me what you can make of this. Is it going to explain why you kept direct communications from our stalker a secret from me, choosing instead to inflict some serious psychic damage with the end goal of getting me to leave you to deal with a bomb all by yourself? Yes. She didn't even look up. Come here. She'd squared the note in the middle of the table. As I approached, I saw that she'd laid a sandwich bag between it and the wood. Holmes handed me a pair of latex gloves. They were in your stepmother's first aid kit, she said by way of explanation. Go on. What do you see? I read it aloud. If you keep dragging James Watson into this, he will die too, tonight. He doesn't deserve it the way you do. This won't stop until you have learnt your lesson. A grammar error, I said. Two instead of two. Spellcheck wouldn't catch that. And learned is spelled the English way. Learnt. She gestured impatiently. What else? Well, it's a death threat, though they seem to like me more than they like you. Gingerly, I lifted the note by its corner. It was square, cut from regular printer paper, thin to the touch. There was a crease down the middle, probably from where Holmes had put it in her pocket. The ink was black. I held it up to the light, but I couldn't see anything special about the rest of it. I told her my observations, and she nodded, pleased. Maybe I wasn't so useless after all. What did you come up with? I asked her. All the things you didn't, she said, and took the page from me. Our letter writer is most likely a woman, and she's writing it on her own behalf. Look, she's used one of those specialty sans-serif fonts, the kind that doesn't come standard. You'd have to download it, and you wouldn't put in that sort of effort if you were someone's lackey. You'd just use Times New Roman, whatever the default was. And that would be the smarter move, too. Either she's so up herself she feels she doesn't need to cover her tracks, or she wrote this in an absolute hurry and that was the default font. I took it back and squinted at the font. It doesn't look all that weird to me. Holmes sighed. The cat on her lap turned its baleful eyes toward me. Apparently she'd found her spirit animal. I scrubbed at my face. I needed coffee. Or a sedative. But how do you know it's a woman? She snatched the page back. All it took was a few minutes' research for me to find the origin of this font. It's called Hot Chocolate, how twee, along with a few hundred others on one of those design sites. Well and fine, but that was the 9th hit on Google. The first was a website that catered to sorority life, and I found our Hot Chocolate on the page about creating invitations for parties. So she's a sorority girl, I said. She's someone who looks at sorority websites, Holmes corrected me. But that was only one search term. After working out the algorithms, I tried 139 others, beginning, of course, with the most common syntactical search strings and moving, systematically, to the least likely. Here my eyes began to glaze. But each time, this website came up first. I doubt that anyone who makes a typo on their death threat looks past the first Google hit, and this website was absolutely covered in glitter. How did the note arrive? It was slipped under my door yesterday morning, like so. She folded it back in half. Look at that crease. It wasn't just casually folded. That was done with a blunt object and a considerable amount of pressure. You can tell from the dimpling at the seam. Someone is upset when they wrote this and took it out on the paper. Obviously, it was a death threat. The horrible weight of what Holmes had done yesterday fell back on my shoulders. So, after you received it, you chased me out and then... waited for someone to come by and kill you? She regarded me evenly. It seemed a good chance to meet them, didn't it? But I expected them to come by with a gun. Bombs are a coward's weapon. And if you hadn't been in the bathroom on the other side of the building, you would have died. I bit down on a knuckle, reining in my flare of temper. I know. That's why I made you leave. She popped the note back into the bag. I'll have your father give this to Detective Shepherd. I'm sure he'll want it now that we're finished. You did very well. You just missed one thing.
What?
Leaning over, she held the unsealed bag under my nose. What does that smell like to you? Forever, ever, cotton candy. I coughed, waving a hand in front of my face.
Didn't you say you could only get that off Japanese eBay?
Yes.
So where the hell did you even find out about it?
August Moriarty gave me my first bottle for Christmas, she said. I'd mentioned that I liked cotton candy in passing, and he'd hunted high and low for a perfume that scent. It had only been manufactured in Japan, he told me, and discontinued in the 80s. Her eyes went far away. I wore it for a few weeks, even though it's heinous, because... well, no matter. It did prove to be useful in the end. I stared at her. Mom jeans and an oversized sweater, borrowed from Abby, I could deduce that much, and her face assiduously clean. The sun dappled her hair. I had no idea what she was thinking.
Holmes, I said slowly. How is this not a warning from August Moriarty?
It's not. It's a woman's work, Watson, clearly.
So...
Nurse Bryony, Holmes said, as if it was obvious. Do you really think Philippa is likely to be visiting a Delta 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 website? More so than the woman who spent all of homecoming requesting old R. Kelly songs and telling me about her sorority formal. The profile is an excellent fit. But the perfume points right back to August. She most likely wears it too, Holmes shrugged. Stranger things have happened.
Have you smelled it on her?
People don't wear the same perfume every day, Watson. I'm sure I'll find a bottle in Bryony's flat. It's in Sherrinford Town, and we can search through it while she's away.
Holmes, how does this explain anything about the dealer? Or the forger's notebook? Or the guy in the morgue?
Do you not trust me to have this worked out? She said.
Because I do. They employed one agent, and that agent failed. So they hired another.
There, it's sorted.
Holmes... Earlier, when I spoke to Detective Shepherd, I asked him to bring Bryony in for questioning tomorrow at 10 a.m. We'll toss a flat then.
She gave me a sympathetic look. I know the feeling. I'm always disappointed at the end of a case, but we'll find another. I was beginning to believe it now, what she'd said about the dangers of caring too much. How emotions only got in the way. It sounded to me exactly as though Holmes was ignoring some obvious conclusions in favor of devising any theory that led August Moriarty off the hook. How hard would it be for him to plant a typo, or to use a special font, to write this note the way a woman would? He knew what Holmes would look for, how she'd interpret it. He could feed her exactly what she wanted to see. The worst part? She'd kept on buying that perfume he'd given her. Even though it was expensive, even though she hated it, it was foreign and hard to find, and that letter was doused in it. I knew what I had to do.
It's a good plan, I told her.
It would be one, too, if there was any chance Bryony Downs was guilty. But look, I still feel really awful from yesterday. I didn't sleep much, thanks to your sense of timing, ha. And the pancakes smell amazing, but, you know, Malcolm got me up so early... I think I need to...
Are you all right?
She asked. I was beginning to sweat. I feel terrible. The truth. I need to go lie down. Also the truth.
Go, she said, waving me away. I'll wait for the detective, and maybe I'll go through the note with your father again. He can't follow my reasoning.
I ran into my father at the foot of the stairs.
Can I see that file?
I asked him in a whisper. He looked at me sadly.
In my study upstairs, in the second drawer.
He had a kind face, my father. I'd remembered a lot of things about him when we moved to England. His dorky enthusiasms and plaid ties. The stupid nicknames he had for Shelby. The way my mother used to shout at him as he slumped at the kitchen table, head buried in his hands. But I'd forgotten how kind he was. how much he'd always trusted me. "I'll give you some space," he said, and after I found his study, I locked the door behind me.
9. I put the file on the desk. My father had clipped things from newspapers, printed articles off the internet. It went chronologically. The oldest information was at the front. I resisted the urge to flip to the back. No, I'd ease myself into it, into betraying my best friend. It started with the usual sorts of things, Sherlockian societies and book clubs, fan sites for my great-great-great-grandfather's stories, but far more for the film and television adaptations. Flipping through the pages, I found printouts from some of the fan sites that tracked the movements of the Holmes clan. They were intensely secretive, Holmes's family, and so gathering kernels of information had become something of a sport for the greater world. I folded out a taped-together family tree, one in my father's own handwriting. Watsons, always the record keepers. At the top, he'd placed Sherlock. Then came Henry, the son he'd had so late in life, categorically refusing to name the mother. I traced through Henry's sons down to Holmes's father, Alistair, and his siblings, Leander, Araminta, and Julian. A small line connected Alistair to Emma, Holmes's mother. Below that was a fork each for Milo and Charlotte Holmes. I browsed through the articles about Holmes's first case when she tracked down the Jameson diamonds. In a photograph with her parents at the Met's press conference, she stood pale and solemn-faced between her parents. On one side stood her father, looking at the camera with hooded eyes. Her mother had blonde hair and a dark red smile, one possessive hand on her daughter's shoulder. Enough of what I already knew. I flipped through to the last page and worked backward. Information on Leander Holmes's charity. The page before it was a clipping from a yard fundraiser, and the one before that, like a lump of pyrite nestled into all that gold, was from the Daily Mail. It was a single paragraph down at the very end of a long stream of gossip, squeezed between a bit on the royal family and another about Shelby's favorite band. Remember how the oh-so-secretive Holmeses made a big splash last year inviting boy genius heartthrob and D-Phil student August Moriarty, 20, to be a live-in tutor for their daughter Charlotte, 14? The two families have had bad blood between them for more than 100 years now, and Daddy Alistair wanted to make a very public peace offering. Well, it looks like things at Casa Holmes took a turn this past week. August was escorted out by the police, and not for diddling with the children. Our source tells us that he got caught feeding Charlotte's dirty little drugs habit. Oxford's already expelled him. The Moriarty family's disowned him. What's next for the former future professor? As for Miss Charlotte Honoria Holmes, we hear it's boarding school or bust. So, her middle name was Honoria. I had to read it again, a third time, a fourth. And then I made myself read between the lines. Was I feeling bad for August Moriarty? Was that what this was? Anyone else would look at the age disparity there and think, oh, that asshole took advantage of an innocent young girl. But Charlotte Holmes wasn't innocent. She was imperious and demanding, with a self-destructive streak that ran as wide as the Atlantic. I thought about the way she'd run roughshod over Detective Shepherd when she'd wanted in on this case. About how she'd convinced me of my own worthlessness when she'd wanted to be alone with her homemade bomb. Her blackmailing a math tutor into buying her drugs was only a hop, skip, and a jump away. The worst part? I'd almost known. I'd made an educated guess that night in the diner, and she'd let me believe it was the whole story, that she was sent to America because of her drug problem. Never mind the Moriarty at the center of it all. If any of this was true, August would have a million reasons to want to bring Holmes down. I racked my brain to remember what Lena had said that night at poker. If she was right that Holmes was upset about August her freshman year, it was further proof that she did actually have a heart and a conscience, despite her protests. Honestly, if I were Holmes, I'd be worried he was living on a street corner somewhere. Milo had come to visit and said, what? That he'd take care of things. But Lena hadn't known how, only that Holmes had been happier after Milo left.
At the time, I'd thought, oh, drone hit, and now I just wanted to know how much it had set Milo back to pay August off. I hoped August had been given a sizable check, maybe a little house by the sea, a book-lined study where the poor bastard could continue doing his math on his own terms. It would have been one thing for a Holmes to fall in love with a Moriarty, I thought bitterly. In fact, it'd be sweepingly, crushingly romantic, and on cue, my imagination began to color it in. Charlotte and August are star-crossed lovers locked in a constant battle of deductive wills, missile codes swapped via elaborate games of footsie, having veal cutlets in the garden while debating whether to annex France, etc. ad nauseam. The thing was, Charlotte Holmes didn't fall in love. And even if, somehow, she had, my stomach roiled again, she'd fucked him over in the end. Jesus, Holmes had screwed a Moriarty. A whole family of art forgers and philosophers and blue-blooded assassins, sitting in their ivory towers, connected to the lowest reaches of the underworld by the gleaming strands of their ambition. Sure, they weren't all bad, but enough of them were, and after this business with August, every last one would have reason to be out for Charlotte's blood. I tried to yank myself back from the brink. I could be doing that same thing I did in the diner, seeing 90% of the story but missing the 10% that actually mattered. Maybe I was all wrong. For one thing, the Daily Mail wasn't exactly known for their journalistic integrity. And maybe August really had encouraged her habits. Maybe she was the innocent one. Then why was he trying to kill her? Well, I thought, as long as I was being awful, I might as well go ahead and be petty with it. I opened my father's computer and, half covering my eyes, put Moriarty's name into an image search. He was a dork, I told myself. A math nerd. He probably had gelled hair and an overbite. The page loaded slowly. The pictures came up, one by one. He looked like a Disney prince. I shut the laptop hard. For another hour, I sat there, paralyzed in my deliberations. When I finally reached a decision, I didn't feel any better. I spent an hour on Google trying to dig up what I needed, but as I suspected, it was nowhere to be found. All right, then. This had to get even more personal. As silently as I could, I unlocked the study door and crept into the hall. All was still. Downstairs, I heard the lonely, spectral sound of Holmes's violin. She was safely occupied. In the guest room, her dirty clothes were gone from the edge of the bed, but her phone was sitting out in plain view. A few weeks back, she'd decided to give me the passcode. For emergencies, she'd said. Her eyes had glittered as she rattled it off. I thought it was supposed to be a random string of numbers, I protested. It was a weak protest. I'd been thrilled. Birthday, snow day, Christmas day thrilled. Holmes had graced me with her half-second smile. If someone can get their hands on my mobile, I'm either dead or close to it. In any case, you're the only other person I'd want to use it, so I thought I should choose a key code you can remember. Surely you can remember this. I typed it in quickly, hoping it was still the same. Hoping it wasn't. 0707. July 7th. My birthday. With a heavy sigh, I scrolled through her contacts. There were only four of us on the list. Home, Lena, me, and Milo. One of the most powerful men in the world, she told me, and the only person she'd listen to if she wouldn't listen to me. I stabbed out the text, one letter at a time. Milo, this is James Watson. I've been solving crimes ever since I was a child. I do it well, she'd said to me. I take pride in how well I do it. Do you understand? Your sister is making a massive mistake, one that might cost her life. I need your family's help. They don't believe I can do it anymore. Come if it's convenient. Even if it's not, just get here. I sent it. Then I deleted any evidence that I'd sent it. It was a futile gesture. God knew it would be a moment's work for Holmes to sniff out my betrayal. I debated trying to make good on my original lie to get some sleep, but I didn't see how I could. We weren't simply being framed anymore. We were being hunted. If we weren't going to be thrown in jail, August and his accomplice would make sure we'd die instead. And who was to say he wouldn't make an attempt on our lives while we were here? I froze. How hadn't I thought of that before? Malcolm and Robbie. I panicked and dashed down the stairs to find my father. He was at the front entrance, waving to Abby and his boys as the minivan backed down the driveway. "Oh," I said. "They're going back to her mother's for a few days," he told me, shutting the door. "Charlotte made quite the compelling case for it, and now I feel remiss in not already having sent them away myself." He sighed. "Detective Shepherd's in the kitchen if you'd like to speak to him. Did you find what you needed?"
"Is that Jamie?" Shepherd called. "Ask him what the hell Forever Ever Laffy Taffy is."
But Holmes's violin was still crooning. I followed the sound as if in a dream. There in the family room, dressed again in her usual clothes, all the way down to her trim black boots. Against the bright window, she was like a shadow gone abstract, the instrument tucked under her chin. She moved the bow with exquisite slowness, a high note, and then a languorous descent. She paused, mid-note like some beautiful statue. It wrecked me, watching her. "What's in?" she asked without turning. I plodded forward as if I'd been summoned to the judge for sentencing. "I just spent a good hour telling the detective about the explosion, as if I knew anything he didn't. Oh, and your father said that your assigned time to get your things from the dorm is at 10:30 tomorrow, so I might toss Nurse Bryony's place alone." She held the Strad up to examine its strings and plucked one, listening. "Is that all right?"
"I'd rather go with you," I said, in as normal a tone as I could manage.
She whirled to look at me, her eyes gone dark as a storm. Rapidly she took in my face, my posture, my bare feet on the carpet, and when she reached her conclusion she reared back as if I'd struck her.
"You said you wouldn't," she whispered.
"I need to hear it from you," I said. There was no use now in pretending. "What happened between you and August Moriarty?"
"You don't..."
"I do. I need to know."
"Watson, please."
"Tell me," I insisted. God, I was terrified. I hadn't known that please was in her vocabulary. "Just, will you tell me?" Tightly, disbelievingly, she shook her head, like I was a man on the street who'd made the mistake of demanding her wallet and PIN number in 10 minutes with her in an alley. Like I hadn't seen the knife she'd been carrying in plain view. In that moment, I invented and discarded 100 things I could have said to her. Platitudes, reassurances, accusations. Only to have her walk past me and straight out the front door. The tap of her boots the only sound in the silence. In the kitchen, Shepherd said to my father,
"Sororities? Hot cocoa? Can you walk me through it again?"
I didn't tell my father or the detective she'd left, for the simple reason that I didn't want them to stage a search. She had every reason to want to disappear, I thought, even with our bomber on the loose. But the last thing I wanted was for her to come face to face with them right now, even if I didn't have any doubts about who would win. It did nothing to stop the sinking feeling in my stomach, because this wasn't a superhero film, swelling music and inevitable triumph, the enemy at her feet in a tasteful amount of his own blood. This wasn't one of my great-great-great-grandfather's stories, her with hat and cane and pocket watch, dashing out to haul the villain in, me waiting by the fire for the great reveal to be brought safely home. This wasn't even an item on my father's endless list, an anecdote to be summed up in some tasteful, mannered way. I didn't even know how that could be done. 128, when you betray Holmes's trust, blank. 129, when you realize she's cared about someone who isn't you, you selfish bastard, blank. 130, when the direct result of emotions she claims she's incapable of feeling is one dead misogynist creep, one innocent girl choked to almost death, your every private moment filmed, and homes nearly blown up into bloody pieces, blank. She'll understand, I told myself after a good hour of stewing. She'll understand why I did it. And for now, I'll respect her need for distance. I can do that much. And when she's back, I'll apologize, and we can get on with the business of not getting ourselves killed. That was when I remembered rules 1 and 2. Search often for opiates, and dispose of as needed. Begin with the hollowed-out heels of Holmes's boots. Maybe we weren't so divorced from the past as I wanted to believe. I thought, oh, I am one stupid son of a bitch, and I hardly remembered to grab my coat as I flew out the door. Between our house and the road was a flat expanse of grass, dusted lightly with snow. When I was a child, it had been its own continent, unending, but now it seemed the size of a postage stamp. It was unforgivingly white and open, and showed no sign of her. How had she managed to move without footprints? All I could pick out were those of rabbit and deer. We were a half mile from the nearest house, and even farther from any sort of civilization. Still, I tromped out to the middle of the road and shadowed my eyes, looking far in both directions. I saw pavement, flat land, our nearest neighbor's weather vane. I didn't see her. Well before I took my father's car to go out looking, I'd rule out the rest of our land. I'd be thorough. Holmes would have been thorough, looking for me. God knows what I'd say when I found her. I made quick work of the trees along the sides of the house. I spent longer in the shed my father had built to store his tools. The lawnmower was there, and his sawhorses, and though it seemed like there was nothing else, I examined the shed from both the inside and out, looking for unaccounted-for space, a hidden room. I felt every inch of wood with my bandaged hands. Nothing. Still nothing. I stalked out into the backyard and considered the stretch of open, icy land behind the house, wondering if she'd managed to turn herself the same colors as the landscape, if she was somehow standing right next to me, if she'd erased herself altogether. Through the back window, I glared at Detective Shepard's bent head. My father was opposite him, trying not to watch me and failing. I glared at him, too. I'd get in the car, then. I'd scour all the countryside between here and Sherringford, and I'd find her, somehow. After I was sure she hadn't OD'd, I'd let her hate me all she wanted. But my hands beneath her bandages were beginning to freeze. I had no intention of getting frostbite twice in 2 days. Gloves, I thought, climbing the porch steps. And then the car, and then Holmes. Below my feet, I heard snickering. It was an ugly laugh, a laugh you'd hear from a small boy who just plucked the wings from a fly. Still, it was hers, and I jumped off the side of the porch, getting to my hands and knees to peer into the foot of darkness underneath. In the frozen mud beneath the stairs, Holmes had tucked herself into a small, dark ball. Her head was tipped to one languid side, considering me. I knelt there, unmoving. She saw me, it was clear. It was also clear she wasn't processing what she saw. Her bare feet were black with dirt, her hair wild. She'd hidden herself under the porch the way a beaten dog would. 74. Whatever happens, remember it is not your fault, and likely could not have been prevented, no matter your efforts. My father, once again, was proving himself an idiot. Holmes? I whispered. "Hello, Watson," she said drowsily. I crawled up next to her, past her socks and shoes all in a pile, past her tucked-up legs. Her eyes flicked over to me, unconcerned. I noticed, with a shock, that her pupils had constricted to tiny black dots. "Hello," she said again, and laughed. "How much have you taken?" I asked, shaking out her socks and pulling them back over her freezing feet. She didn't resist, but she didn't respond either, even when I put a hand inside one of her boots and came up with an empty plastic bag. God, have you always kept this stuff with you? Rainy days, she said, shutting her eyes. Her voice wasn't ragged or hoarse. It wasn't hers at all.
Oh, Watson, always so disappointed.
No, stay awake, I said, tapping at her cold face. She batted my hand away half-heartedly. What have you taken? I asked.
Oxy slows it all down, she smiled. Done with coke. Hate coke. Am I disappointing you?
No. Liar, she said with sudden venom.
You expect impossible things, and I refuse to deliver. Can't do it. Won't.
I am not expecting anything from you, I said, except for you not to freeze to death. Shucking off my coat, I wrapped it around her. Come on, let's go inside.
No.
Holmes, it's freezing. We need to get you into a hot bath. I tugged on her arm. Immediately, she clawed at my injured palm with her nails. I flinched away.
I said no,
she said, staring at me with eyes that were all iris and no pupil. I cradled my hand to my chest, trying to steady my breathing. How much have you taken?
Enough,
she said, looking away. She was bored again.
I won't die. Go away.
I'm not leaving without you.
Go away. Take your coat. It smells like guilt.
Actually, I said, I think I'm fine right here. I couldn't make her go inside. I probably couldn't make her go anywhere with me ever again. What else could I do? After a moment, I tucked myself in beside her, hoping my body heat at least would do something to warm her up. The world slowed to a standstill, as it does when things go so wrong, the bad news closing in like a lowering ceiling. I should have been thinking up a solution, a way out, deciding if I should grovel for her forgiveness, or if I should tell Detective Shepherd that she and I should be pulled from the case, but I didn't. I curled up against her in the cold and listened for her breathing. What were you supposed to do when you were dealing with drugs like this? How long would the effects last? I wished for the first time that I'd done something with my years at Highcombe other than read novels and swoon over icy blonde princesses who'd never touch anything harder than pot. I could have gained some practical knowledge. She might be dying, I thought, and I had no way to know. The responsible thing would be to call the police, or an ambulance, or at the very least tell my father and let him sort it out. I didn't. They'd write that on my tombstone, I thought. Jamie Watson. He didn't. The snow sifted down through the porch slats, filling in the tracks her knees had made crawling through the mud. I wasn't Catholic, but this had the distinct feel of purgatory. The bitter cold, the unending wait. No idea of what would come after. After what felt like forever, the back door slid open. I listened to the heavy footfalls over our heads.
Jamie, my father called. Charlotte, Detective Shepherd and I are done talking. Jamie,
I held my breath. After a long minute, he swore and trudged back inside.
Worried,
she observed after we heard the door shut. I stared at the cloud her breath made in the cold.
Good that he worries. I don't. You're nothing to me.
Liar, I echoed. I tried to put the force of my affection behind it.
You did once, said Holmes. Mean something to me. You don't now.
She began to shiver. Was that a good sign? A bad one? Either way, I couldn't stand it. Carefully, I pulled her into my arms, and to my great surprise, she let me, curling up against my chest as pliantly as if she were my girlfriend, as if I'd held her before, as if I held her every day. Somehow, that scared me far more than the rest of it. Lee Dobson had found her this way, I thought, and my arms tensed instinctively.
Dobson had... Stop thinking about them, she said. It's not yours to think about.
What am I allowed to think about? I asked wearily. If I had a rope, this was its end.
Let's talk about the things you think you know.
That horrible snicker. Let's disappoint Watson some more.
No, I said. You don't?
August was my maths tutor. Did you know that?
You did.
Can tell by how your hand seized.
I thought I wanted to hear this, but I didn't. I really, really didn't.
You don't have to. It was my parents' idea, for publicity. Had some bad press and they wanted to change the story in the media. Forgiving Holmes, his fucking liars. I hated him at first, but after Milo moved to Germany, I got used to him. It was like having an older brother again, and then it wasn't. It was something else.
What? I asked, into the silence.
I loved him, and he wouldn't have me.
The words came sharp and hard, sudden in their ferocity.
He was too old, he said, and even if we waited, it would be a catastrophic mess. Our families, you know. He said that I'd grow out of it. My crush. Him saying that was worse than him rejecting me.
I couldn't quite breathe, hearing her speak this way as if reciting her sins. When she spoke again, she was horribly precise.
I wanted to punish him, to make him feel what I was feeling, so I got him to use his family connections to buy me cocaine. I knew he'd do it. I'd been taking so much, and he was so scared that without it I'd go through withdrawal.
She drew a breath.
I wanted to make him hurt me, and then I wanted him to pay for it. The night his brother Lucien drove up with a boot full of coke, I called the police. Lucien ran, and August stayed to take the blame, as I suspected he would. After all, he felt responsible. My mother fired him. Then she phoned his don at Oxford to have him expelled. And after all of that was over, she sat me down in the drawing room. She'd drawn all the curtains, and she explained to me very patiently that this was a lesson. It wasn't to happen again.
The drugs, I asked quietly.
The drugs, she laughed. No, I'd started with the drugs at 12. I was too soft on the inside, you see. No exoskeleton. I felt everything, and still everything bored me. I was like a radio playing 5 stations at once, all of them static. At first, the coke made me feel bigger, more together, like I was one person at last. And then it stopped working, and I began taking more and more, and they sent me to rehab. When I came back, I spent a few months going the classical route. Morphine, syringes. It made everything quiet and far away. I was wrong inside, you see. I'd always been wrong. But it was too messy, the morphine, and I was found out. More rehab. So I dropped the morphine for oxy. More rehab, then more oxy. I've never quite managed to shake it, any of it, and my parents stopped expecting me to. It doesn't scare them anymore. The whole time she spoke, she didn't look up at me once. She was curled up in my arms like she was my girlfriend, but she was talking to me like I was an empty shell. What my mother was afraid of was sentiment, she said. Of my being sentimental. With my particular skill set, it's a liability. With what I felt for August, I became a worse person. I was sent away to think on what I'd done. It was never about keeping me from the drugs. It was about keeping me away from myself. Jesus, Holmes, that's horrible. What kind of monster would demand that her daughter not feel? Is it really? I think my mother was right. I don't trust myself anymore.
No one does.
She lifted her head to study me. She'd gone so pale that the veins on her neck stood out like pen marks. Not even you. It was awful to see her like this.
Holmes,
you thought I killed him, and it's almost true. He lost his life because of me. He got a job, finally. Works for my brother in Germany doing data entry. What a waste. But he's forgiven me. He's a sentimental fool. August even demanded his family leave me alone. I was disturbed, he told them, and no good would come of it. They listened. It was their last favor to him. You see, his family disowned him for taking my fall. You aren't disturbed, I said, trying to mean it, to make her feel better.
You aren't disturbed at all. You just made a mistake.
I don't make mistakes, she said, and pulled away from me. I know exactly what I'm doing. Even if you did, you were still forgiven. They forgave you, and accepting their forgiveness isn't a sign of weakness. I was desperate to pull her back to me, back out from where she'd gone, deep inside herself. I never wanted this. Never. I wouldn't have thought any different of you if you told me.
You wouldn't have, she asked,
the last vestiges of the haze gone from her voice.
How interesting.
Unfair.
You keep using that word like it has any real-life implications.
It does, I insisted.
Fairness, Watson, would see August Moriarty restored to school and family and his fiancée. He really could have told me about her when I first confessed it to him. I wasn't about to stalk and kill her. But no, he's alone in a foreign country and friendless. Really, the parallels are striking.
You're being melodramatic, I said, and her eyes flashed. Good. Any reaction was better than none.
I'm sitting right here, being your friend, and I'm not going anywhere.
I'd be fine if you did, she snapped. I don't doubt that, but I'm still not going anywhere, and because I'm not leaving, I need you to listen to me. I took a breath. I'm sorry for what happened to you. I am. It's awful, and the fallout from it was unreal. And I'm sorry I broke your trust. I never wanted to hurt you, but I only did it because I was desperate. Don't you think that your trust in him and his family might be a touch unfounded? Like, have you had Milo look into their activities? Has August been in Germany all this time, or has he made any trips to America?
He isn't responsible, she snarled. I've told you that from the start. He may hate me. He should hate me, but he isn't a killer. And if you can't believe that, Watson, I will not work with someone who refuses to trust me.
But you refused to trust me in the first place, I said.
Why didn't you just tell me the truth? I know you have personal stakes in the matter, but so do I.
What stake could you possibly have in this? She was inches from my face now. How could she not understand?
Your life.
Your life and mine. Are they really worth you being right in this?
I would never let you die, she said, her breath coming fast and shallow.
But what about you? What's gonna happen to you? I could hear my voice breaking as I pictured it. Her on the concrete, the blood a halo around her dark hair. Her under a slab of granite in her lab. On a slab in the morgue. In a bath of shattered glass or poisoned in the night. Her curled up under the goddamn porch to die. Her stone-blank eyes staring up at me. Jesus. It could happen to either of us, but if my being there meant she had any more of a chance of staying alive, then I would be there. Full stop. I was saying it to her out loud now, pleading. I know you don't need me. Any fool could see that, but we are in this together. I will be here, right here, until it's over. You're the most important thing to me, and I can't imagine being without you. But if the moment it's over you want to send me away, I will. I'll go.
You should.
I tumbled out of her in a rush.
You don't see it, that I'm not a good person. That I spend every minute of every day trying not to be the person I know I could be if I let myself slip. And I'll bring you down with me. I have. Look at us. Look at where we are.
That's impossible.
Is it? She asked dully.
I was losing her again.
Are you blind?
You can't be a bad person, I told her.
Because you're a robot, remember?
It really was the lamest, most half-hearted joke I think I'd ever made, but there wasn't anything else that I could say. I'd betrayed her trust. She'd kept things from me I needed to know. She'd endangered our lives. I'd endangered our friendship. I'd had no idea what was next. All I wanted was for her to look at me the way she used to, with that wry half-twist of her mouth, and make some deduction about the sandwich I'd had for lunch. I realized then that Holmes was laughing. I looked at her askance in case she was also bleeding from the head, but there it was, her low chuckle, a hand thrown up to hide it. When our eyes met, there was a kind of confused electricity there, like we'd broken up and simultaneously exchanged vows. It brought back that hallucinatory fear I'd had that night in the infirmary. That night Nurse Bryony would just as soon kiss me as smother me with a pillow. I didn't understand girls at all. Bryony. Bryony. Holmes, I said urgently. What did you say August's fiancé's name was?
I didn't.
Her eyes went vague.
I didn't know her at all, only that they were engaged and that he left her in the wake of...
Jesus Christ! Watson! And she shoved past me in her haste to get out from under the porch. Where are you going? I called.
Milo,
she replied. I snatched up her shoes and crawled out after her. The two of us, together, burst through the door, covered in clumps of mud, shivering from the cold. We must have looked like we'd come up from some Arctic hell. In a way, I guessed we had. My father was standing with his arms crossed in the middle of the kitchen.
Jamie, he said, a warning in his voice, as the detective stood up from the table.
We pushed past them and ran straight up the stairs.
Where the hell did you two go? He yelled at our backs.
5 minutes, I said, spinning around.
Just give us 5 more minutes.
In the guest room, Holmes practically fell on her phone.
Milo,
she said into it, and I froze. The text I'd sent. If he ratted me out, this could get ugly all over again.
Where are you? A tarmac? I'm only catching every other word.
Her voice went dangerous.
You're coming to New York? Tell me why.
No, that's a lie. That is too.
Fine, tell me the last time you left your apartment.
Before this.
No, don't give me that. You were the one who had them put it in your office building.
Yes?
No, I'm not on drugs.
No?
Yes, fine, I am. Don't hang up.
Of course I want to see you while you're here, you ass.
He was coming.
He was coming, and he wasn't going to tell her that I'd asked him to. I said a silent prayer to the saint of deranged best friends' deranged older brothers. Holmes paced, tracking bits of frozen mud into the carpet.
No, don't hang up. I have a question.
She paused.
What was August's fiancé's name?
I don't care. It's important.
No, it's not what you think.
No, I'm not.
Did you just call me a cow, you whale?
Milo... Damn it. She whipped around to face me.
He hung up. The idiot thinks I want her name so I can find her and kill her.
There's some deep irony there, I said, smiling.
Startled, she smiled back, just for a second, and then her phone chirped with a message. I peered over her shoulder.
Bryony Davis, don't eat her. See you soon.
Bryony Downs? Bryony Davis? She'd barely covered her tracks. Holmes and I stared at each other. My heart was pounding. Shepherd opened the bedroom door.
So, he said, his brows knit. I've examined the note. I've spoken to your father, and I appreciate your passing along Bryony Downs to me for a more, official interrogation. But what is all this?
He gestured to Holmes's muddy pants and my damp hair.
About, exactly. Something I should know?
She threw me a glance. I caught it.
Well, we're dating now, she said, a hand creeping up to touch her hair. We just made it official and... Oh, God, Jamie, this is kind of embarrassing.
I tugged her hand down into mine.
It's not embarrassing, I said. I mean, it's been such a long time coming, but I guess I was, blind to my own feelings.
Holmes beamed at me, and I pulled her to me, tucking her under my arm. The detective made a small, involuntary noise like he was choking.
We were outside in the snow. Well, okay, I ran out there because I got mad because I thought he didn't like me. But it turned out he did like me. He was just shy. So he ran out there to find me, and...
She smiled at him, and it was strange to see how fatigue made that fake expression real.
I mean, do you want to hear what he said? It was so romantic.
Shepherd put up his hands.
Ah, I have so much to do, he said, backing out into the hallway. You know how it is, all back at the station, where I should go.
We'll talk more later,
Holmes assured him with what I could tell were the frayed ends of her composure. He smiled tightly.
Right. Yes, he said, shutting the door, and from the hall we heard him mutter, God, I hate teenagers.
The next morning was forever in coming, and still, when it finally arrived, I wasn't ready.